Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
The NBA basketball season is officially over. Comes to a close last night. Double-digit win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They take out the Indiana Pacers in seven games. Still a very memorable season. If you're a Pacer fan today, I think you got to be thrilled, right, with what you saw from your team. If you're a Thunder fan, it's a young squad. We could be on the brink of a dynasty. I think that may be a little bit premature, but we'll talk about that and more for our recap, and also to talk about the big blockbuster deal that went down yesterday. Kevin Durant on his way to the Houston Rockets. We have our NBA analyst, James Holish. James, it's great to get you back on, and now the season is officially over.
Yeah, between the Kevin Durant deal going down, like, I guess that was right before the game, and then the way, you know, obviously the unfortunate injury in the game. The NBA playoffs, I think overall were great, but, you know, it's always like the lasting memory. It kind of went out with the dud, not a thud. I mean, with a thud, not an explosion. So yeah, it's over. Let's turn the page, get ready for the next season. Congrats to the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Extremely unfortunate that as we talk about the Thunder winning an NBA championship, we have to mention the catastrophic injury early on in the game. Do I believe the game would have been different had Tyrese Halliburton played? Absolutely. He looked like he was in his bag early on. James knocks down three shots from beyond the arc, way behind the arc. Had a little pizzazz to him. This game early on had the makings of being like a heavyweight fight. I mean, it was back and forth. And I know it's a small sample size. We're only talking about the first 6 minutes of this game. But as soon as Halliburton went down, you could just sense a real shift, a real change in the way the game was played after that. And I know that Indiana had a one-point lead going into the end of the first half, which was an accomplishment in itself, but it just really changed the dynamic of everything that was going to unfold over the next 42 minutes. And I think that's unfortunate from a Thunder standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and no doubt. How could it not change, right? We can argue, and I think me and you both agreed, Halliburton is the most important player to the Pacers, right?
Yep.
He sets the tone. He says he's the engine, the playmaker. He might not get you 20 points, but he is going to be, his fingerprints going to be all over the game on both ends of the both sides of the ball, because he's actually been playing really well defensively. So yeah, just to have such a devastating injury happen, especially after his hot start, right? I think he had three threes in the first quarter. It was deflating. I think Obi Toppin was very candid, and he said that, you know, he couldn't stop thinking about it, and like it was on his mind. He's like, yeah, we needed him out there. So it's especially for the Thunder, right? Obviously, we all, me and you both, were very impressed with the Pacers, but, you know, we thought this would be a short series. It wasn't a very long series, but the Thunder now going to hear the whispers, obviously, and they don't care. They won the championship, but the whispers going to be there that, you know, hey, lucky, if it wasn't for the injury, and it's all hypothetical. We'll never know. All props to the Thunder. I'm not saying it, but it's going to be said.
I'm not saying it either. I mean, it's very difficult to win an NBA championship, and the one thing that stands out to me about this Thunder squad is they showed resolve. For a team that is so young, and I mentioned this, I think that this team is capable of rallying off multiple championships. It wouldn't surprise me if they're back in this spot again next season. Wouldn't surprise me if they're here over the next 3 years. It would not surprise me. I think that they are that good. I think they're that deep. And I said going into Game 7, depth doesn't matter. That was the one thing that I said going into Game 7 that kind of blew up in my face. Last week on the show, we were talking about it, and I said what the Pacers have done by forcing Game 7 is they have neutralized the depth of the Thunder roster, because now it's 48 minutes. You play your best eight. Well, we saw what happened, right, with the catastrophic injury. But still, with all that being said, this is a team that had to face quite a bit of adversity, and they're very young. To get and accomplish what they have this season, it's a hell of a year, and it should not be diminished in any way, shape, or form.
It's funny you say that, because I kind of think differently. I think watching this playoff run, as big and bad as the Thunder came into playoffs looking, great record, great point differential, all-time great team. They still have a ton of assets. You can't take anything away from them. But they went 7 with the Denver team that I don't think a lot of people thought were contenders. You know, and Denver had Aaron Gordon on one leg and missed him for some, you know, he was missing time. They went 7 with a team, the Pacers, who no one predicted to be in the finals, who, you know, lost their star one game, and the star was hobbled in the last two games of the series. So They are great. Shea is great. The supporting cast, they're deep, they're talented, very well coached. Also, let's talk about it. Mark Daigneault got circles coached around him by Coach Rick by Carlisle.
Yep, he did.
If Carlisle had a healthy, you know, we could play the if game. I'm not going to do it, but yes, Carlisle coached circles around him. So I actually, sure, more than anyone, the Thunder are positioned to be great for the next decade, right, with the assets and the players they have. But I don't think they're head and shoulders, here comes a dynasty. They don't look like that because they struggle. They really struggle in these playoffs. And I say the opposite as far as what adversity they really have. You know, hey, Jalen Williams didn't shoot well. Chet played poorly a couple games. You know, so I think this is – they were overwhelming favorites in every series. There was no adversity, no big injury. And that's why even their celebration seemed very muted because it seemed like there were a team that was like, okay, we won. We're supposed to win. You didn't really feel a sense of ecstaticness because it seems to me the work wasn't really done, right? Boston had years of disappointment. Nuggets had years of disappointment. This one last year was their first win in the playoffs. Am I correct?
Yeah, and I agree with what you're saying. I'm talking about adversity in the form of going toe to toe with the best player in the world, a team that maybe I didn't consider the Nuggets championship contender. But the Nuggets still took them 7 games. And for a team, you know, we talked about the process. I remember going through this conversation with several people. The first time Oklahoma City went to the NBA Finals with Durant and Westbrook and Harden, we started having the conversation about, okay, it's part of the process, right? You wait your turn. They never got back to that point. And so I think that's what impresses me most about this team. They very easily could have folded against a veteran-savvy Nuggets squad. They didn't. They won game, they won game 7 by like 30 points, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and I guess, my thing is like, if you're saying, if we want to say that their adversity was they tripped over their own feet a lot, I'll give them that because they shouldn't have went 7 with Denver. And again, I think that was, you know, part of the coaching, like you said, veteran savvy. But like, again, you're the overwhelming favorite. And it took good on Caruso for standing up to the challenge and guarding Joker, and Joker was exhausted. You could see those guys were exhausted, but that's not the Thunder's fault. So even their adversity to me seemed almost like first world problems.
And that's fair, too.
In relation to the rest of the NBA, as far as what other teams had to deal with, even their adversity was like, oh, I can't find my remote. Oh, I misplaced my car keys. I was an hour late for work. Not like real adversity, but you know what? It sounds like I'm downgrading the championship, and I'm not.
No. That's a fair point, that everything that was put in front of them was kind of at their own recollect, right? Like everything that went wrong for Oklahoma City in this postseason, you could directly point the blame to the personnel, to the players on the squad. Where if you go back and you take a look at, we'll say, a number of teams in the Eastern Conference, right? The Celtics. You could talk about, you know, injuries throughout the entire Eastern Conference playoffs. The Knicks weren't 100%. You go to the Western Conference, you look at injuries there. That's what you're trying to say, is that every problem that they faced in this postseason, it was at their own will.
Kind of, because I'm also sounding like I'm taking a shot at the Pacers, because the Pacers made themselves a problem, right? I think almost the Thunder a few times would get up in a couple of games and get like, okay, we're here. This is who we are. We're up. Teams fold right now. And when the Pacers didn't fold, I think the Thunder kind of didn't know how to react. Or like the one game where the Pacers just blew them out, right? So that's what I mean by their form of adversity. They just kind of weren't ready for it because they hadn't seen these things. And so, yeah, a couple times they looked like they fell on their faces a little bit, right? They soiled themselves a little bit. But all credit to the Pacers for forcing that action. No one, again, I think a couple guys in the media are saying something that really rings true to me, and let's see if you agree. 5 years from now, I think we might think more about the team that lost these finals than the team that won it. And the Halliburton injury is going to be kind of like the defining moment. Not any shot that that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander made in the fourth. The defining moment is going to be, wow, this team went to 7, and then Halliburton got hurt, and that was a series. Versus the Thunder really impressed us and showed us and wrestled this championship and won it. And that might be unfair, but I kind of see that point.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think that in 10 years, we'll have a documentary on this Indiana Pacers team. I think what happens in the next 2 to 3 years with this Oklahoma City roster and what this team can accomplish over the next 3 years will play a big factor in that. If OKC over the next 5 years does not win at least one more NBA championship, I agree that 5-10 years from now, we are going to talk more about this run from the Pacers. I agree with that.
And I think if they do win a championship, and sure, then obviously the Pacers will be a footnote in history. But, I mean, even the feeling I got around from the fan bases, and that's on social media, even out and about. I was watching these games out in public. And I'm in San Diego, not a basketball town, not a Thunder town, not an Indiana Pacers town. Overwhelmingly, everyone was rooting for the Pacers.
I think the entire country was rooting for the Pacers, it seemed like.
That's the thing, right? So they're the underdogs, but also the way that they did it, because no one thought this would happen. Everyone was like, okay, yeah, 5-game series, you know, but they're gonna lay down one game or whatever, Pacers go nuclear. And we watched T.J. McConnell. He was exciting. We watched Pascal Siakam. Like, this Pacers team really, I think, even the casual fans gravitated towards them more than the quote-unquote aura of the Thunder. And, I don't necessarily have a dog in the fight, but I'm hearing a lot of people, Thunder aren't likable. They like the way they play. None of that matters. I give them all credit in the world because they made it happen. You win a championship, if it's in front of you, you got to snatch it. But, I think that almost the story of the playoffs is more about what the Pacers are doing than what the Thunder did.
Again, James Holas, our NBA analyst, joining us right now as we break down the NBA Finals. Let's look at the after effect of Game 7, and obviously the big sticking point moving into next year, it's going to be Tyrese Halliburton. We can expect him to be out all of next season. James, this is a seismic shift already in the Eastern Conference before free agency, before we see a lot of roster movement. We can now look at the Eastern Conference and say, there will be no Jason Tatum, there will be no Tyrese Halliburton. The first thing I thought of this morning when I was preparing for this segment was, there is zero excuses for the Cleveland Cavaliers to not get out of the Eastern Conference playoffs next season. Am I wrong in thinking that? Like, this would be a disaster of epic proportions if the Cavaliers are not able to represent the Eastern Conference next year. And maybe that's an unfair statement to make the day after the NBA Finals, but that's the conclusion I have come to.
It feels unfair, and it's funny because I had the same discussion earlier on social media where somebody was saying there's no reason that the Knicks or the Cavaliers aren't in the finals next year. And my answer to that is, you would have said this year there's no reason for Boston or the Cavaliers not to represent.
Yep. And I did say that, by the way.
Was that?
I did say that, by the way.
I did too. And guess what? We saw the reason. The Pacers just found another level. Injuries happened. Things happened. Styles make fights, right? You never know how every season is its own entity. So no matter what we see on paper, no matter what we think, the season's going to humble us and teach us something. And I think this year we learned the Pacers are better than we thought. So next year, guess what? Desmond Baines is Orlando. Who knows what that team looks like? Another year of seasoning for Paolo, Banchero, and Wagner. And now you got a legit borderline all-star playing beside them. Who knows what that team looks like? Detroit. Detroit looked great against the Knicks. They took them 6 games?
Yeah.
Let's say they make a move this offseason, and these guys come back polished and hungrier than ever. And they make a mini leap. We don't know. So I get it. I think I'm with you, right? I think the Cavaliers are going to they got to make some moves. Something has to change with the Cavaliers. I don't think they can come back with that same core four and other guys that think that they're going to make a difference because no one's scared of them now. Jared Allen, hey, the light's a little bright for you, buddy. Same thing with the Knicks. The Knicks don't really have a coach right now, right? But we're talking about the Cavaliers. I'm with you. Logically and on paper, it sounds right. But maybe the Cavs are who we think they are. Right, and next year we don't know how any blockbuster can trade. Any blockbuster trade can happen. So who knows who ends up where? And all of a sudden, there's an Eastern powerhouse starting.
I guess the better way to phrase that is there should be urgency on behalf of the front office for the Cleveland Cavaliers now. Right? I mean, I think there's urgency from Orlando. We saw it. They just gave up 4 first-round picks for Desmond Bane. The Cavaliers better have some urgency, knowing that 2 heavy hitters will not be playing basketball next year.
Oh, and with that, I agree with, because even when I first saw that comment about the Cavs and the Knicks, my knee-jerk reaction was like, that's silly to say, and I just answered the way I did, where anything can happen any season. But, boom, Indiana is basically off the board. Celtics are basically off the board as far as being contenders. The Bucks, same, is out, basically off the board. Right? And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Giannis this summer. So, honestly, like, I'll say this, there's never been a shorter runway for those teams. And like, look, the Cavs, this will be year 3 of the Donovan Mitchell experience, right? No more excuses. Like, they got to strike now. We know that windows open and close at light speed in the NBA. And, you know, the Cavs team positioned right, but, you know, you lost in the, what, was that the second round? You know, so something has to give because warp speed before the tax apron comes in and kind of like roster stagnation comes in. So the Cavaliers absolutely have to figure something out.
See, this is why you're so good at what you do. You just gave the perfect segue into the next segment talking about Kevin Durant and having a new home in Houston. We know that things happen in light speed. Windows can close, windows can open, and they can do it with a snap of the fingers. You take a look at the Houston Rockets, a team that fell in 7 games to the Golden State Warriors in the first round, have the makings of being a very, very good roster. I did not believe in the Rockets going into the postseason. I actually picked Golden State to take them out in the first round. It just seemed like something was missing. They got Kevin Durant on the extremely cheap deal over the weekend, and I don't even care if it's a one-year rental. The fact of the matter is, it was low cost to go out and get someone of Kevin Durant's caliber. Is it the final piece? I don't know, but the fact of the matter is the Rockets are being very aggressive. They're being very proactive, and apparently that was the best offer that Phoenix had out on the table.
Which is absolutely absurd. Speaking of Desmond Baines, who went to Orlando for 4 first-round draft picks, I think unprotected, and then some, you know, some, obviously KCP was in there, whatever. For Kevin Durant to go for a guy like Jalen Green, who I think this was like the absolute rock bottom of his stock could be because of how he played in the playoffs. Dylan Brooks, who is Dylan Brooks, fine. And then a bunch of second-rounders in like this year's first, like I think 5 second-rounders. We're going to talk one day about how comically inept the Suns front office has been. But for the Houston Rockets, I like it. I'm cautiously optimistic. I also feel like maybe, just maybe, it's a situation where you're making a dish and something's not off. It's a little, no, not great. To when you go to remake it, all of a sudden you add way too much nutmeg. You kind of over course correct. And I don't, this team is still in a point where they're in the gestation period. And you add a guy who's going to be 37 this year, who is a high volume, takes a lot of oxygen in the room, even if his personality is not like that. I mean, he is who he is. It's Kevin Durant. So it's definitely a step forward, and I think it's a nice pivot. Like you said, even if it's a one-year rental, guess what? You got off the Jalen Green contract, and you open some space with Dylan Brooks gone, and then KD's gone, you'll have some cap space. So I think it's a nice pivot. I'm still not too confident in the Houston front office, but they addressed a very big need. They got a primetime scorer to go with Sengun and Amen Thompson, and it's definitely a big step forward for Houston.
Obviously, there was no leverage for the Phoenix Suns. That roster was a dumpster fire through and through. But does this return for Kevin Durant speak more to where, let's say, the Phoenix Suns are at as an organization, knowing they had no leverage? Or does this speak more to the type of, I hate to say this, but type of, not person, but maybe teammate that Kevin Durant is? Because I mean, last year, we're talking about a guy that did play 62, 63 games, and he averaged 27 a ball game, right? And as far as his field goal percentage, his true field goal percentage was well over 50%. I know he's at the end of his career. I get this. He's going to be 37. There's plenty of positives here. If I'm not mistaken, the bird rights also come with Kevin Durant. There's all these potential perks to trade for a guy like this, and this was the best offer out there. To me, that has to be an indictment on the type of teammate Kevin Durant is, or it's a true that Phoenix had no leverage here, none whatsoever, because this roster is a dumpster fire. Which one is it more? Which side do you lean towards more?
I lean more towards the dumpster fire, and also, again, we can't understate what a team is giving up real assets for a guy who'll be 37. And I get it. He looks great at 37, but he's 37 and has had a serious injury in his career, and he's 37. And he's a lot of lower leg injuries the last couple of years as far as hamstring strains and stuff, and he's 37. So if you're, whatever you're giving up for him, you know you're only going to get maybe 2, maybe 3 high-quality years left. And that's what their assumption is, even though, you know, LeBron has kind of shifted that paradigm so much, and Steph Curry shifting that paradigm, even Kevin Durant is. But I think there's a certain level in the mind that just won't allow you to say, okay, we're getting to 36-year-old Kevin Durant, and we're going to sign him for the next 4 years. That's really hard to see him staying upright and staying super effective for 4 years. So it does speak a little bit. He seems like he's becoming an NBA nomad, a player of his caliber who's actually completed the Rainbow Challenge, which I don't know if anyone knows about that. It's about getting the Roy G. Biv colors of jerseys. He's completed it now. That's how many teams he's been on. And it's very strange, very unique situation with him. Seems like a nice guy. I don't hear teammates trashing him on the way out.
No, they don't.
There's a certain, I hate to use the term empty calories because he's awesome. He's incredible. He is Kevin Durant. He's won two championships. He's the best player on two championship teams with Golden State, with Steph Curry and a bunch of all-stars. But he's on a, you know, I think, what, his third team since then now? And it's just, it is what it is, man. It's fascinating. Fascinating to see. And I'm curious to see how history treats him in 10 years.
Yeah, me too. Me too, because you talk about the Rainbow Challenge and completing it. I brought that up yesterday, and I had someone tell me, well, Shaq did as well. Not even remotely close to being the same thing. Not even remotely close. By the end of Shaq's career, where we watched him kind of bounce around between Phoenix and Cleveland, and then he goes to the Celtics, not even remotely close to being in the same situation. Kevin Durant is averaging 27 points a game. He's still productive. You mentioned the fact that he's 37 years old. Nobody was trading for a 37-year-old Shaq. Wasn't going to happen.
Exactly. That's a terrible comparison to make. Because Shaq, like, his last two or three stops was just, I don't know what he was doing. I think, you know, delusions of grandeur, out of shape, looked horrible. He's a meme now, right, where they show him in a Celtics uniform to show when people are washed up. Kevin Durant still has plenty of juice, But then you look at the Phoenix team, you know. I remember Devin Booker speaking on it, how respectfully he didn't know our team was going to stop him, and they were atrocious. So I think that it speaks more to the ineptitude of the Phoenix front office. They did a terrible job. The Bradley Beal deal is going to be one of it's that stuff of legends, right? How that the ripple effect it's had on this franchise literally destroyed the franchise for no reason when they didn't have to trade for Bradley Beal. But here we are. So I think it speaks more to that than the effect, the actual impact and the efficiency of Kevin Durant. But it's not a good look on his legacy.
He is James Holis, kind enough to join us each week. James, there is going to be plenty to talk about in the offseason. I think it actually could be very wacky. I think we could see a lot of movement over the next couple of months. Can't wait to get you on once again. Before I let you go, of course, we've got to talk about you on social media and where we can find more of James Holis.
Not much anymore, man. The finals actually kind of sapped the life out of me a little bit. The injury sapped the life out of me, but you can find me on formerly known as Twitter at Snotty Drippin, homage to the great Scottie Pippen. I'm also I have an account on Where the Sky is Blue that I haven't been using very much. Just talk basketball, talk life, make jokes. The big thing the other week was people tearing down Pau Gasol to prop up the greatness of Kobe Bryant, and that was my crusade for the last weekend. So, come over, let's talk some basketball and life.
Listen, you will not meet a bigger Kobe Bryant fan than me. My daughter is named Kobe, for crying out loud. And the idea of tearing the greatness of Pau Gasol down over the weekend was asinine. Totally insane. And this is what I hate about social media basketball talk. This made literally zero sense to me.
Yeah, it's the fact that also it gives a voice to people who probably shouldn't be speaking, to people who have to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And anyone who pops in just sees these comments and thinks, oh, these two people are speaking to each other. This is a reasonable conversation. And it's not. That's what the problem is, right?
Yeah.
So I saw the comment. Somebody said, whoa, Tracy McGrady is ridiculous. He had Prime Yao. And he didn't win anything while Kobe was going to the finals with Pau Gasol. I'm like, come on, man. It's hilarious to see. But we digress. And me and you, we don't need to give any oxygen to that kind of nonsense. Al's one of the greatest. Kobe's one of the greatest. And that's all you got to say.
James, always look forward to the conversations. Thank you again.
You're the man. Thanks for having me on.
Ran a little bit longer on that segment with James. No problem. Great basketball talk, as always. By the time we talk next week, we'll be able to recap the NBA draft, and we'll start to see these offseason rosters take shape. It's already the end of June. Right, Game 7 of the NBA Finals takes us all the way nearly through the end of the month, so we'll have a lot more basketball talk coming up relatively soon. With that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We'll do it again tomorrow. Until then, be safe. I am out.